Thank you for the introduction. How do I pronounce your name? I don't want to mess it up. Emil. Thank you, Emil. Everybody give a round of applause to Emil. Yay. First and foremost, you guys have a full disclosure and warning. I am going to be involving you guys into my presentation. I'm a jerk like that. I know you guys pay a lot of money to just sit here and listen to people talk, but military didn't train me like that, so sorry. All right, name of the talk, so it'll be From Combat to Code, How Programming is Helping Veterans Find Purpose. Disclaimer, I myself am a veteran. I like acronyms and F-bombs. For the purpose of this talk, I'm going to try to refrain from using both. However, if I say anything that doesn't make sense, please ask me to elaborate. If you have write your notes down, please ask at the end of speech, so that way I won't leave you guys out in the cold. All right, let's get into the dark nitty-gritty. Over 200,000 veterans return home each year. Currently, 21.2 million Americans are classified as veterans. Sounds a lot, but actually that makes up about only 9% of all Americans that you can in the United States over 18. You can put every veteran in the country currently on the island of Manhattan, and rent prices will actually go down. So that's a nice part about us. Of those, most recent unemployment number is 495,000, and 42% of those are between the ages of 18 and 45, with those most affected being minority and women veterans, and those numbers are rising. As the country's currently going through this unique ebb and flow of having people sign up, having a drawdown on top of having more people sign up suddenly, we're having this unique flux in our community where there's a lot of people coming in as well as a lot of new people becoming veterans at the same time. Unemployment is also on a growing trend, currently showing that about 14% of veterans are underemployed. What does underemployment mean? That means that based upon what's on your resume and your skills, you're getting paid less than what is the median average. Say if you're a software engineer for 10 years and they're paying you $50,000 because they hate you for some strange reason. I don't know who does that. Obstacles our troops are facing. Negative perception based upon the media and entertainment. Over 70% of all American civilians look at veterans as the broken heroes. You're either on the side of the spectrum where you're going to be doing the your Olympus has fallen thing, or you're going on the side of spectrum where you are broken and you're a risk to the company. That is not true at all. As a veteran that is a combat vet, I can let you know from personal and professional experience, because I work with vets every day, they're some of the sharpest troops, sharpest Americans that you can ever reach out to and integrate into your companies. Lack of understanding of veteran skills and culture. We see this every day, in which people have no idea what a person who used to put missiles on planes can do in their company. My take is he can probably do whatever you tell him to do because he could put missiles on planes. So, like, show us a, I don't know what to tell you. But the most important thing that's hurting veterans is due to lack of network due to the mission. We've been, since 2001, September, we've been in a wartime effort, and that has been hurting veterans coming home for having a war this long going on due to the fact that while they're doing multiple deployments and also moving from location to location, they're not having the opportunity to build that network to be able to have that plan of having people rooting for them with the skills and being able to make the phone calls and emails that most of you here do. Problems in the tech industry. Skills gap in America is making it incredibly difficult to find talented workers predisposed to a lifestyle of learning. And the perception of lack of inclusion and empathy is consistently being highlighted by media pundits. Those are two big problems that are consistently being brought up, that there's not enough Americans that can do the jobs of today's nation, which is true. And the biggest perception is that people basically treat Silicon Valley like there's a bunch of 25-year-old boy kings running around, which is partially true. Problem meets solutions. Many veterans across the country are dedicating their time to develop technical skills to prepare the next phase of their lives. These troops will also be the talent your company desperately needs and want to have access to. First question I usually get is, why are veterans and spouses learning to code? You'd be amazed how many spouses come through our program looking for opportunities to learn how to program. Number one, biggest answer to that is it's the last skill-based job of the 21st century. This is one of those, programming is one of the last jobs in our current industry, in our current economy, that based upon what you put into it, you can get out of it. From being a hobbyist to being a full-blown professional. How many hours and how much time you log behind doing the work, which veterans love, actually shows in your life. And that's one of the biggest reasons why people are coming to this industry. It's an in-demand skill that translates well regardless of location. If you are a well-practiced JavaScript developer, it doesn't really matter whether you're in the middle of nowhere, Florida, or here in the Valley, right? We're seeing that all over. We have a veteran in my own program who's moving from Jacksonville, Florida, to Ohio, and he already has a job lined up. And it's like, thank goodness, because I have no one that I know in Ohio that can help you. It requires the level of critical thinking and diligence that the military has implemented in troops. What that means is, first and foremost, if you don't know veterans, they're the most crafty people around. We used the joke that if you gave a veteran 550, you gave a room of veterans 550 cord, they could solve all your company's problems in about 20 minutes. For you guys who don't know, 550 cord is basically what they give us during every deployment. A lot of people don't know that veterans don't get every tool that they're supposed to have when they deploy. So you have to learn how to solve problems without having the optimal preparation for your mission. But veterans, we get the job done. Purposeful or meaningful work is intoxicating to veterans. A lot of the things that you guys are doing with your payments plan, being able to connect people's families, especially on the social platform station, veterans absolutely love missions like that because it's touched our lives at one point in time. I don't know a veteran that isn't still married or has a great connection with their family if it wasn't for Facebook, Gmail, Twitter, and Instagram, being able to still catch up on those little moments that you miss when you're overseas. And what seems to be the favorite that our troops tend to bring up is the salaries are nice as Foxtrot Unicorn Charlie Kilo. For those of you that know phonetic alphabet, you understood that. For those of you who don't, learn phonetic alphabet. I'm not going to say it. Why should your company look to hire vets? We're quick learners, and we're already prepared for the grind of extensive learning along with having a great attention to detail. One of the things that people don't understand is similar to how you would look in code documentation for hours on end to learn how to code, that's pretty much how every job training in the military is done. Looking at a giant book called SOPs, or Standard Operating Procedures, and hoping to get everything right in there so you don't end up getting paperwork. That's basically the first 4 years of every vet's life. They are untapped resource of critical thinking. We already talked about that with the 550 cord. Actually, a funny story with some of my friends from EOD, they spoke about how they had to physically heave a missile and put it into a bunker even though it was still kind of live. And I was like, why would you do that? That's dangerous. That's the dumbest thing ever. And they were like, well, we gotta do what we gotta do. I was like, cool, it's your fingers, whatever. and one of my favorites is that they always have the best water cooler stories. Like stories like the one I just told, I got a million of them. Young woman at the Twitter desk that I just spoke to earlier today had a hilarious story about how her dad, when she was three, snuck her into on the naval installation to look at radio programming. She didn't have a clearance for it because she was three. And I was like, that's a horrible thing. I'm glad he's retired because he would definitely get in trouble for that. So, how are veterans getting the skills we need? Free online resources. The free online resources are significantly better than when the oldest person on your team started programming. Every one of you guys have at least one person that's at the get off my lawn stage of their life when it comes to programming. and they tell you about the old days where to learn Ruby, you had to go through the Ruby docs. Well, that's not how things are anymore. There's a lot more fun, a lot more interactive ways to learn the syntax of programming as well as to learn how to program. My favorite product out there right now is Brian Holt, Computer Science and Four Semesters curriculum that he has out there. It's amazing, and it teaches one of those skills that a lot of people coming from code schools don't have right now, which is computer science fundamentals. So that's just one of the many things out there. Education companies and NPOs, such as myself and my team, I'm just inserting a shameless plug, like I told myself to, we're working together to give veterans tools to increase their skill set, from going and using remote technologies to teach veterans how to code to companies like Pluralsight giving away their product for free so that veterans can go through their paths and learn extra skills that they need to be able to come into this industry. Everybody's working together to, in the end, help veterans break into cool companies like PayPal. Many veterans are double dipping, which is going both to college as well as through programs that focus exclusively on the practice of coding. Right now, currently in our program, we have 10 veterans in our cohort, and about half of them are also enrolled in college simultaneously. So that means half of them are doing double the workload for this current semester, which is incredible, a little bit stupid, but incredible, and we're like doing our best to help them. How you guys can help. First, ask your HR teams to integrate with military communities. Don't wait till veterans are out of the military before you start talking about initiatives to hire veterans. Go ahead, take those opportunities, go to the bases. Any civilian that is talking about jobs that actually is interested in the military is going to love you. Like, yeah, sure, come on. And that will give them opportunities to understand what you guys are looking for before they even start thinking about what they are going to do when they get out. The average veteran probably doesn't think about what they're going to do once they're out until maybe 6 to 8 months outside of it. So that behooves you guys to be making regular trips to the installations so that the troops can see what you guys are doing regularly. And they can already have that on their mind of what they want to do or what they have an idea for. Ask your recruiting teams to make contact with local bases and see if they can be a part of the TAPS programming. I don't know if any of you guys have friends or family who are veterans. TAPS program is an acronym for Transition Assistance Program. It is probably the most garbage program in the military. It's prepped to get you out of the military, not to prepare you for the civilian sector, so you usually leave out with a thank you for your service on a resume, and that's about it. The private sector, they're always looking for better tools, and you guys can come in and shore up those severe weaknesses of that program by giving veterans real options and real honest-to-God feedback of where their skills lie. There was a recent study that said the average first-term veteran grossly overestimates their earning potential based upon their resume or how it's written. You guys, especially your recruiting teams, go in there, actually look at them like, all right, this is what you want to make. This is what you need to be doing. And hopefully groom the next generation of people that need to be at your company. And finally, mentor. Make the time to teach the skills your company needs to see. A lot of things that, especially in the veteran community, what we learned was that there was an old saying that goes, you can't be what you can't see. I was one of the first people in my circle of friends to actually transition from a job that had absolutely nothing to do with code to programming professionally. And I remember looking at the opportunities that code had and trying to share with my veteran colleagues, and nobody was willing to make the jump until I did. Then people started looking at it as an actual viable way to make a living. So that's the easiest way to get people like me into your industries, into your careers at your companies, is going out there and showing us the cool stuff that you're working on. All right. Thank you guys for your time. At this point, we're going to start opening up for Q&As and some open dialogue. My Twitter hashtag is Jerome Hardaway. My Xbox hashtag is Little Stumper. If you think you can beat me on Overwatch, I got these hands for you. So, find me. All right, any questions?
thanks for coming. Within SRE, one of the things we do really well is incident management. We don't do it well enough. It seems to me that that's an area where, for example, vets would be a great contribution to, you know, in terms of knowing how to keep their head, how to communicate, how to get things done. How can we take the message out to the vets that this kind of thing is something where there's an opportunity for them?
Roger that. Piggybacking on some of the things I said earlier, being out there in our community or having dedicated events in your company for our community where you ask us, when you invite us out. It doesn't have to be hiring focused. It could be something as easy as a Memorial Day barbecue and you're sponsoring that for the vets in your local area. Or going to, I would say the VFW, but I don't think anybody under 100 uses the VFW anymore. So I'm not going to give you that bad advice. And also just getting the opportunity to learn that lingo. When you think about how agile teams are ran and how veterans operate, it's pretty much the same thing, just different names. Like a stand-up for you guys is what we call a sit rep, situation report for us, you non-military types in here. Agile, Zulu hours, we do all the same stuff that you guys are doing, but we just do it in a more physical manner. And just being able to cross that chasm and actually open a dialogue can do wonders for SRE and for veterans. Actually, funny story, it wasn't until I met the person that was looking for speakers that I was like, what are you talking about, SRE? They're like, oh, cite reliability. And I was like, oh, well, we do that already. I don't know why we didn't know that was an actual industry out there just for that. So they were like, oh, well, you should definitely come and see it. I'm like, cool. So you guys should definitely, like, the more you talk, the more we will learn about what's out there. It's not just a, hey, just learn the code, and then, all right, what do I do with this skill? All right, we could be on a back-end dev, front-end dev, site reliability. I know when I told our troops about this, they absolutely loved the idea of just being able to put FireSale. When they saw 2 weeks ago when Amazon crashed, I hope they don't come back after me after that, but when they saw when AWS crashed, they were all like, you know what, they probably needed a site reliability engineer. It's like, maybe. You would be the first person to tell them? I'm not. So, yeah. So those are, I hope I answered that question.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
What do you see as the biggest points of failure for folks coming out of your program that if we're mentoring or going into the communities, that would be skills that we could pass on? Or is it that our community isn't aware enough of things like the lingo and the value that the veterans are providing?
Roger that. What we are finding is that it's more just the community does not have a adept ability to gauge the capability of what veterans bring to the table. Like I said, to wonder about the computer skills of a person who is trained to safely put missiles onto a jet is, like, to me, was mind-blowing. Because, like, well, there's a computer on the missile that he's not blowing it up, and there's a computer connected to the missile to put it onto the jet. I'm like, you've seen enough movies to know that. So he's obviously good enough of missiles to still, well, computers to still not be here. So let's start at that baseline and then go on from there. So that's the biggest thing, is just to get to that level of, once again, everything starts. The biggest issue that we're seeing is networking and conversation. The guys at the civilians who are in those companies are not having conversations with the veterans or with people who are adept in those veterans. One company that is actually doing a bang-out job with it is Facebook, but they are definitely cheating because that whole internet.org organization they have, they've been stealing NASA scientists for it, and most of the NASA guys have military experience, so that's definitely made it easy. They have a big Air Force community out there, which is probably why they're my favorite right now.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hi. I'm in recruiting, and I think everybody thinks getting veterans into these roles is a great idea, but...
Sorry. Can you speak? I can barely hear you.
Hi. Much better. I'm in recruiting, and I think everybody thinks, you know, getting veterans into these roles and help bridging the gap is a really good idea. But when you have small headcount and you need to make immediate impact, sometimes it's tricky bridging the skills gap. What have you done or what have you seen be successful in terms of doing that or to get, you know, that buy-in for that manager that just has one headcount or, you know, doesn't really think they have the ability to take somebody on that is missing some of the skills?
Roger that. What we have done, first and foremost, is, once again, communication. We actually go speak to those managers, see what they need. We have our curriculum. We keep our curriculum and our syllabus proprietary because when you're a nonprofit and you're doing good, cool stuff, everybody wants to steal your stuff. So once we go talk to those recruiters, we actually show them what we're teaching. And then we see, we have that conversation about people in their area and how can we shore up the skills. We were working with one company that one of their biggest complaint was the local code school that they were pulling from was it was taking about anywhere from 45 to 90 days for them to get those students up to speed. They're like, that's definitely too long to be spending time trying to get someone up to speed. And we were asking them, well, all right, well, you let us, here's what we have, this is what you're looking for the most part, what do we need to do to ensure that we can make it anywhere from 25 to 30 days of getting our troops up to speed for you? And they shared, and we were able to get the troops that they had selected, that they had liked his work a lot, able to get that troop sped up to speed for them. So that, I think, like, I hate to say, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but a lot of the answers to the questions are in the end just going out there and talking and starting a dialogue and asking and then going from there and picking out how to create specialized solutions for your problems.
Quick follow-up to that. How do you feel about sort of apprenticeship programs in the same vein where, you know, yeah, rather than a full-time offer, it's not necessarily an internship, but an apprenticeship to hire sort of offer?
I absolutely love them. I think in the next few years, companies in general, not just in programming, but all type of across the spectrum are going to go towards apprenticeships because in the end, college does not teach you all the skills that you need. But the companies, especially, and every company has a specialized format of how they use the languages and the technologies out there. You can go code at Netflix and try to jump over to Facebook, and you're still going to be as lost as a rookie coming from college jumping into Facebook. Well, maybe not as lost, but pretty close. So how that happens is you just have to continue with the dialogue, I guess, and start with the apprenticeships. Any more questions? Bishop Mills Rice complaints? No, one more person. Yes.
Hi. So tech already has a gender problem. And anecdotally, I'm aware that the military has also gender problems. How can I, as a woman in tech, get excited about having a new teammate that's from the military?
Well, first, not just like not all people are bad, not all veterans are bad, one. I think that's a big thing. And second, you don't know if that veteran is going to be male or female. Women veterans are on the rise. They're one of the fastest rising minority groups in the United States of America currently. Our current cohort, I think 40%, like four, we have four females in our current cohort. So they're barely outnumbered by the guys. So, and that's been a regular mission for us, is to be more inclusive, because we understand the problem is out there with minority and women veterans where they don't truly feel like a veteran. So they don't apply for a lot of the veteran opportunities that are out there in the countries given. And as a result, and plus in the media and with everything, what you think is a veteran, and based upon your question, you probably thought, tall white guy that says like crazy stuff all the time. Like, you know, he busts beers open on his face and, you know, likes to drink crazy. Nah, we're all not like that, I promise you. We're some of the most laid back. You'd be amazed how many people forget that I'm a veteran. They're like, dude, I forgot, totally forgot you, sir. Happy Veterans Day. I'm like, hey, thanks. Still at work. It's cool. So that's one thing. Second thing is, I think then in it comes down to HR as well. Like, you have to screen your people, like make sure You know, if you have a no asshole policy at work, you have to make sure that person's not a jerk. That's HR's part of their responsibility and part of our responsibility, which is what we work so hard on, make sure that the people that we don't intake to train are jerks. It's a very big deal for me. I have my own personal no jerk policy in the nonprofit because I have to make sure it's a safe space for women and LGBTQ. I'm sorry, I always get tongue twisted with that, but I have to make sure it's a safe space for everybody, not just the, you know, bro military types. Any other questions? Oh, one more person. Here.
So you mentioned going to speak at military bases. How does that process work? Like, do you have to talk to...
Roger that. The person you had to, the office you had to contact, it will be the Office of Public Affairs. They handle all civilian to military conversations within the military community. So if you're going on active duty installations, that would be the office. So usually it's always public affairs, regardless if it's Air Force, Navy, Army, Coast Guard, Marines, always Office of Public Affairs.
And I also wanted to say one thing to the person who just asked a question, which is, yes, we have a gender diversity problem. We also have a racial diversity problem. And on average, the U.S. military is more diverse in the dimension of race than the tech industry is.
Yes. To piggyback on that statement, that's a very true thing. Because the mission comes first, we tend to jump ahead of what the civilian culture is doing because it makes us, like, we have to make sure that the country's safe. Now, there are things that have been done wrong, horribly wrong, in the military. It has its own story path of the LGBTQ community and racism, but we quickly focus on fixing those issues due to the fact that we want to make sure that the mission is successful. So, look no further than how rapidly we changed our... how rapidly the military changed their mission in regards to their stance on LGBTQ after 9/11 when they realized that there were several people, a part of the shortage for translators was due to kicking really talented people out. That was part of the reason they changed their rapid stance. In the end, for us, it becomes mission comes first. That's why they're looking at beards and stuff all over again. So
thank you for coming out to speak. So as a I guess I'd be an ex-spouse of a former military guy. the one thing I did notice is the transition from the military to civilian world. But not only that, I also noticed the transition from being from the military to civilian to being in engineering. And so, I mean, I guess this question can kind of go for everybody in here, including those in recruiting. Is how do you merge the skill sets of site reliability engineering, which kind of encompasses programming and system administration and high availability and, you know, constant deployment, in translating that into someone who, I don't even want to say getting out, but actually before getting out. A proactive approach before you even get out. Like, to be honest, when you talk to someone, and I'm on the East Coast, so in the South, if you talk to someone and you say, what is a site reliability engineer, most kids and most students have no clue. So I can only imagine for a veteran coming out, how does that work? And this kind of is an open question for everybody, is how do you make that, how do you merge that gap? Because in the end, you're still looking for people who can work. And you're still looking for students who can do the job. But if you have no idea that it exists, or if you have no idea of what it is, how do you merge that gap? And this is kind of open for everybody, not just you.
Roger that. How I looked at site reliability engineering in correlation to military, and when I said how, you know, we're already doing that, is if you look at what we call, especially in the Air Force, we call it AEF, or the Expeditionary Force Cycle. And basically what that says is that it trains us to be able to rapidly, consistently deploy over a certain amount of time to do our jobs. So basically we had a preset schedule of when we would be at home taking R&R, at home doing our job, at home training, prepping for a deployment, and then out in the door in the AOR, or the area of responsibility. That was saying, we're talking about constant employment and being able to prep and move things quickly and reliable resources is a very similar process to how the military operates. So that's where, once again, that comes into the play of communication. If you had no idea about the AAF cycle and how that works and how the military operates to put thousands of human beings in one space within 72 hours, then you wouldn't know that, oh, it has a lot of things in common with site reliability and, you know, the S1 through S4 formats, like how squadrons are set up from having a command to having logistical or as you guys say, supply formats or formulas. Those are all things that people, if you had no military experience, no military background, you wouldn't know. So that's where, once again, that communication is key, being able to create a safe space to have a dialogue to ask those questions, and having people on the other side to be able to look at what you're asking for and then see what type of veteran is most qualified for that, or what are the skills, that what type of jobs and what level. Because even though, for instance, if I have a E1 and an E9, or I'll take an E5, so someone has been enlisted for like less than a year or 2 years, once again, a lot of trouble. And somebody that's been like 6-7 years, they could both have the same job, but that E5 is a level 5, that E1 is a level 3, or that E5 has already went to level 5 school or had taken their CDCs. So this level 5 has more managerial experience, they have more EQ experience because they've been to the flight school where they have to train and learn how to become better leaders. They know how to make an effective fire team, how to make an effective team. And so they have those leadership skills that you're looking for. They also know how those logistical skills that you're looking for as well when it comes to things like how to rapidly deploy things. Same thing with the E7 or somebody who was a commander of a small squadron. They know how to use the resources and get them expeditiously out there, out the door. Any more questions? Awesome. All right, I'm Jay Hardaway. I'm Jerome, everybody calls me Jay. So thank you guys for your time, and hopefully you guys have enough time for lunch.